This is where we live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchel. 51 miles of the Appalachian Trail runs through Connecticut. Have the White Blaze Trails piqued your interest to one day do the entire trek from Georgia to Maine? Coming up, we'll talk with Connecticut residents who've hiked the AT. We'll also hear from the Appalachian Trail Conservancy about the legendary hike and whether its popularity has impacted preservation efforts. That's later. Now, thousands of hikers attempt the AT each year. Usually it takes 6 months to walk the more than 2,000 miles of trails. But did you know there's a subculture of hikers and runners who seek the fastest known time, or FKT, on the trail? Jennifer Farr Davis is one of them. She became the first woman to set the overall fastest known time record in 2011. She finished in, get ready for this, in 46 days, 11 hours, and 20 minutes. She joins Where We Live today to talk about her experience in her new book, The Pursuit of Endurance, Harnessing the Record-Breaking Power of Strength and Resilience. Jennifer Farr Davis joins us by phone. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Hey, Lucy. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to tell our listeners at the top that you set this record back in 2011. How many miles on average did you hike to get that record in 2011?
I averaged 47 miles a day for 46 days.
And how does someone do that? What exactly did you have to pull from inside to keep going? Because we know this trail from so many people that we know have done it, or we've done a show previously about hiking the Appalachian Trail. It takes a lot of effort and strength to complete this trail, and you did it in such a speedy way. I mean, how did you do it?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and I think there's a lot of misconceptions that when you're setting a record, you run. And I didn't run at all during my 46-day hike. If anything, it was crawling that got me to the end. So as much as, like, overcoming the mountains, you're constantly looking at overcoming, you know, self-doubt and insecurity. And just, it's a very much an internal journey as it is an external journey. So it's a different animal than a traditional through hike. And I've done both. I don't think one's better than the other. But the record definitely offers something very special as an experience.
You had mentioned that you had done the Appalachian Trail a few times. So when you set the record, that wasn't your first time. So let's talk about the first time you were drawn to hiking the AT. What set you out and how old were you?
I was 21 years old, and I didn't grow up hiking or backpacking, but I graduated from college and, you know, I needed time and a place to figure out what I wanted to do, where I wanted to go. And also, a big part of me wanted to spend time outdoors and use my body. And it was hard to put that desire into words. But looking back, I feel like it makes so much sense, because for most of history, humans have been outside and moving. We've been following herds. We've been gathering. We've been working in the field. So I think a lot of us have a very primal urge that says, don't sit at a desk all day and then go to a four-wall house. Like, go outside, use your body, move. And that's what I was feeling when I was 21, and I still feel that today.
Where did you go, or what did you read? Any classes that you took to prepare for that first time on the Appalachian Trail?
Well, I should have prepared more, and mainly I should have taken a practice backpacking trip. I had the trail right out of college, and the only thing I did that was really helpful beforehand is I took a 5-day class with a man named Warren Doyle, who is one of the characters in my book. But he's completed the Appalachian Trail close to 18 times. Now he's working on his 18th completion. So he knows a lot about the trail, and he doesn't focus on gear or physical preparation. He really likes to talk about sort of the mental and emotional aspects of the trail, and I found that really helpful before starting out on my journey.
What was the most challenging thing about the trail the first time you set out to accomplish it, Jennifer?
I just think how relentless it was. I felt like I was pretty fit, but there's a big difference between running a marathon or playing in a sports tournament, and then that evening having a warm meal and taking a shower and sleeping in a soft bed. You know, the trail was day in, day out, up and down mountains, aching shoulders, blisters on your feet, snow, cold rain, which is worse than snow. You're always away from your friends and family and support network. So just, I remember, like, oh, it was like 3 weeks in, and I got to this place that's about 250 miles into the Appalachian Trail, and they had a map of the entire path. And I remember thinking I had the hardest 3 weeks of my entire life, and I looked at the map, and it hardly seemed like I had left the beginning. So just like the unending, relentless nature of a through hike, I think, is the most challenging aspect.
Now, you said that you had so many more miles to go before reaching Mount Katahdin in Maine. I'm just curious, when we will look at we'll be talking with someone from the Appalachian Trail Conservancy, and they have lots of tips for people before they start out on this journey. One of them is not to hike alone, but that's something that you did. You did a solo hike. Were you ever worried about your safety?
I love hiking alone. I really hesitate to say to people that they shouldn't experience that if that's something they want. I would never push someone out of their comfort zone if that's not something they feel safe doing, but honestly, before I started, I was terrified that I was going to be bored and lonely when I went out there. And then I experienced that, and what it turned into was peace. And I was like, this is the first time in my life I've really been able to embrace solitude. I have not spent time alone before hiking. And this is the first time I don't have to produce or react or perform in front of another person or a group of people. And, you know, there was a real... that freedom. There was a freedom in spending time alone, and it's so hard to find. And so I think the trail is still one place where you can find that and experience it and embrace it.
I'm speaking with Jennifer Farr Davis. She's an American long-distance hiker. In 2011, she set the record for the fastest known time on the Appalachian Trail, a distinction she held on for 4 years. She's the author of a new book called The Pursuit of Endurance, Harnessing the Record-Breaking Power of Strength and Resilience, that's out this month. Jennifer, so we were talking about the first time you hiked the AT. What made you go back?
Well, after my first hike, I realized my life was very different. My values had changed. I valued simplicity. I value quality relationships. The trail put me in contact with individuals who are very, very different from me, from all different backgrounds and beliefs, and I love that, and I valued that. You know, I embraced the solitude, like we just said, and then I think the big kicker is I got off trail and I got a job, and it was a great job, but I'd wake up and go to work every day, and you know, I was taking showers and wearing clean clothes and putting on deodorant and all that good stuff, and I never felt as beautiful as I did when I was on the trail. And when I was out there, I was filthy, you know, covered in scrapes and dirt and bug bites, but for 5 months, I didn't have a mirror and I didn't have media telling me what I should look like. So I started to see myself in a new way through other people's interactions. If I made someone smile, I felt beautiful. And then, you know, I'd always thought that nature was pretty, but I had never seen myself as a part of it and a part of all that beauty. And it just got to the point where I realized I felt like I belonged more in a natural setting and outdoors and on the trail than I did in an office. And I really wanted to help other people experience that kind of life-changing transformation. So when I was 24 years old, I started my own hiking company, Blue Ridge Hiking Company in North Carolina, and I also started this routine of just saving up and taking time off to hike and feed my soul.
Why pursue this fastest known time? Before I read your book, Jennifer, I had no idea there was a subculture of hikers, some even runners, that do this trail in a very speedy way. As I mentioned, it takes most people 6 months to hike the AT. You did it in 46 days when you made that overall fastest known time. Why set out to do it that way?
I think it's a different type of adventure. By the time I wanted to try for the record, I had about 8,000 or 9,000 miles of traditional backpacking. I'd done the Appalachian Trail, Pacific Crest Trail, hiked on different continents. And people, you know, part of human nature is asking, what am I capable of? What can I achieve? And some people are making new innovations, and some people are trying to find cures for diseases, and some people are asking their bodies what they can do. And I think it's important, even though it appeals to a really small percentage, because, you know, all these people in the book, The Pursuit of Endurance, and I know, you know, personally, I wasn't groomed to be an endurance athlete. I wasn't brought up with any hint of setting trail records. And all the people who are doing it have just very average backgrounds. And when you look at these people and look at what they do with their bodies and the fact that they can cover close to 50 miles a day for a month and a half or 2 months, it makes you realize, even if you're not doing that, even if you don't want to do that, it just makes you, like, it confronts you with the fact that our bodies are a gift and our bodies are, like, capable of so much more than what we're doing on a daily basis. And I think, you know, sometimes it takes that extreme example or those, like, inspiring individuals who are pushing the bounds to, like, motivate other people to just moderate exercise, to walk 2 or 3 miles per day. And I know now I have 2 small children under the age of 5, and I'm working my butt off, and I don't do any type of endurance events. But because I know my body can do that, it does make me want to include just, like, moderate exercise whenever I can.
You were the first woman to reach the fastest known time in 2011. What did that mean for you, and did you feel like there were those that discounted your efforts?
You know, it was very important for me in my journey on and off the trail to be the first woman to set the mark, because it's just interesting. Like, before my first hike, I never really thought about gender equality. I never really processed the societal expectations of women. And I got on the trail, and it was the most equal environment I had ever been a part of. There was no hierarchy. There's no boss on the trail. You know, there's no family set up on the trail. And as a woman, I found that I did really, really well out there. And again, it was redefining my sense of beauty, you know, and made me feel like I was living up to other people's expectations instead of my own potential. And so for me, it took, like, at this point, you know, it's taken like 15,000 miles, but I feel like the trail has helped me claim my ability and my equality as a woman. And the record was a really physical manifestation of that. So it was important for me personally, and I love that this science is coming out now and just proving that in efforts of extreme endurance, there is no gender gap, there is no gender difference. If anything, you know, females might have the upper hand, and that's been illustrated by people like, you know, Diane Nyad in her long-distance swimming, and another hiker in the book, The Pursuit of Endurance, Heather Anderson. She's now set records on the Appalachian Trail and Pacific Crest Trail. So I think it's really important for women to accept that they can perform equally as men in efforts of endurance, but also in things like work and the boardroom and their family, you know. So it's had a lot of carryover for me, and I hope it positively impacts and also encourages other women to claim their ability and feel like they belong in worlds that are sometimes dominated by men.
You mentioned in your book you encourage other women to reach the overall fastest known time, to not to compete against you because you're a woman, but to also compete against the men.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, again, like, I was the first woman, but I'm not the last woman. And more and more evidence and more science is pointing to the fact that women can compete with men. So why would we limit ourselves? I think a lot of times females limit themselves because there is a different category for them. And I think in a lot of areas, you know, probably not the 100-yard dash, but in a lot of areas of life, we need to dissolve those categories of male and female because they're limiting. And that was one thing I found in the long-distance hiking and the trail records, is there didn't need to be 2 different gender categories for the overall title. So more and more, I think you're going to see a list that includes men and also includes a fair amount of women.
Today, I'm speaking with Jennifer Farr Davis. She's an American long-distance hiker, also the author of a new book, The Pursuit of Endurance. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Now, some of us dream about hiking the Appalachian Trail. Are you one of them? You can join the conversation today, 860-275-7266, and find us on Facebook and Twitter, at Where We Live. Jennifer's going to stick around with us, and coming up, we'll take your calls and also hear from the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. This is the organization that works to preserve this unique U.S. trail on the East Coast. More after the break. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. I've been talking with author and American long-distance hiker Jennifer Farr Davis. She has a new book out called The Pursuit of Endurance, Harnessing the Record-Breaking Power of Strength and Resilience. In it, she talks about what drives athletes like herself to seek trail records. Farr Davis set a record on the AT in 2011, hiking the more than 2,000-mile trail in 46 days, 11 hours, and 20 minutes. Now, the Appalachian Trail was created more than 80 years ago. The idea came from Stamford, Connecticut native Benton McKay, who was an early pioneer in preserving land for recreation. Today, the Appalachian Trail Conservancy works to preserve the trail. Joining us now from the studios of WGMU in Fairfax, Virginia, is Laurie Pottinger, Information Service Manager for the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. She also hiked the entire trail back in 1987. Laurie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
The way that Jennifer and others that she profiled in her book hiked the trail, some of them even ran, pretty unusual. It's not the way that most people think about hiking the AT. What is the Conservancy's stance on this way of making this trek?
Well, we just love to see people getting out there and hiking the Appalachian Trail, and people do it in so many different ways. Jennifer is really such an inspiration. I have to say, I'm just a huge fan of hers. She's a terrific writer. Her book about her first hike is incredible, makes you feel like you're there, and I strongly recommend that you read all of them, starting with Becoming Odessa. But she set out, you know, to do the trail as a personal challenge. But I think for everyone that goes out there, it's a little bit of a challenge, whether it's getting away from the office just for a day or two, or whether you're just simply going to attempt a through hike. So fast or slow, man or woman, young or old, the Appalachian Trail is there whether you're going to do it for half a day or 6 months or take 20 years to do it.
Laurie, through the years, has the view of how people hike this trail changed? In Jennifer's book, she talks about one particular friend, Warren Doyle, when he set the record on the AT. You know, he didn't get it wasn't a good relationship between him and the Appalachian Trail Conservancy at the time.
Well, you know, you mentioned the trail's founder, Benton McKay, and really, I think our perspective in the early days came from him when the first person to set a speed record, he said, oh, you know, they're just doing a stunt. They don't really appreciate or understand what the Appalachian Trail is all about. And we sort of inherited that bias. But over time, we came to see, and I have to say, especially through Jennifer and the way she has talked about her journey, that, you know, there can be beauty and discovery when you're doing a fastest known time attempt. She saw so much wildlife. She had so many insights, and she was incredibly humble about her attempt and made it very personal. So I think we've just come to see that any way that someone hikes the trail is something to be admired. And the important thing is that you just get out there and do it and learn to do it in a way that's sustainable. And that's what we're about now, is trying to get as many people out there to enjoy it, but learn how to do it in a way that is responsible and helps preserve the trail, and also get out there at times where it's not too crowded, that if you want that opportunity for solitude, you do a little research and find out what areas are crowded and which ones are not. And we're trying to provide the tools for that and help people educate themselves so they can make, you know, good choices about how they experience the trail and really enjoy it.
Laurie, you mentioned the trails being crowded at times. How has the Appalachian Trail Conservancy seen the popularity of this trail change just in the last decade or so? There's definitely books by Bill Bryson and Cheryl Strayed that have piqued people's attention. But how many hikers actually attempt this each year, and how has that grown?
Well, gosh, the numbers have really just grown astronomically and books are a big part of it. Bill Bryson's was certainly one. But last year we saw almost 5,000 people attempt the trail. And you go back in the 70s and it was just a few hundred. So it's a really huge increase. And we've been seeing record years, several years in a row. But the thing is, people don't all have to start in the same place or time. Last year, about almost 4,000 people started in Georgia, most during a six-week window. But increasingly, people are learning that they can attempt the trail in different ways. In fact, we're encouraging people to think about starting in the middle, which is a pretty radical concept to some, but they actually find there can be benefits. Not only do you avoid hiking in those crowded conditions, but if you start in the middle, you can start in easier terrain. You can actually have a longer window to complete the hike, and there can be just a lot of benefits. And I just have to mention that you can even start a through hike in Connecticut, because that has been done. And in fact, there's a famous hiker by the name of Cool Breeze from Connecticut who sort of invented a way to hike the trail starting in Connecticut that is really started to get popular. So there's just so many ways to do it, and you just need to be informed about what you're going to encounter before you get out there. And we try to have as much information on our website about that as we can.
Today we're talking about the Appalachian Trail on Where We Live. This is something that you have hiked in the past or you hope to do in the future. Join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Stephanie's calling from Simsbury. Stephanie, go ahead.
Hi. I just want to say thank you so much for having this amazing guest on. I am planning a through hike of the Appalachian Trail for 2020, and my passion for backpacking started when I read Wild by Cheryl Strayed. And I was just wondering what advice your guest would have for a woman who's planning her first through hike in a couple years and what she might have wanted to know before she started her first through hike.
Well, Stephanie, thank you for your call. I'll start with Jennifer Farr Davis, who's joining us by phone. Jennifer, what's some advice for this for Stephanie, who's planning to do her first through hike to walk the entire AT in 2020?
Well, just like Laurie just referenced, the Appalachian Trail Conservancy has a really wonderful website called appalachiantrail.org, and they list references to help plan your hike. They also talk a lot about important things when you go hiking, like leave no trace, learning how to hike sustainably, not leave an impact on the woods. And so I would encourage you to consider becoming a member of the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. It's like super affordable, and then they're going to give you so much more information for that small membership, and you're going to be inspired by people's stories. You're going to be informed by the facts and statistics. You're going to learn about the best places to start or alternative starts, like Laurie said, what we call flip-flop, going in the middle. So I think immersing yourself in the organization and culture before you start is really important. And then the one thing I wish I had done before I started is just take a backpacking trip, a week-long backpacking trip before setting foot on the AT. It is shocking how many people go out there and begin a six-month hike without spending 6 days in the woods. So try to do a practice hike, what hikers would call shakedown, making sure you know what you need and, you know, get used to taking care of your feet on the trail and maybe set up your tent in the dark and all that good stuff. And then mentally and emotionally, I always just say, try to remain totally stubborn, totally, totally stubborn, and yet, like, completely adaptable, which seems counterintuitive. So you might need 2,000 miles to make sense of that. But that, to me, is the key to success on the Appalachian Trail.
Jennifer, we just have a few more minutes before we head to break. I wanted to bring up, as we read The Pursuit of Endurance, your new book, you mentioned the importance of having a supported hike. Your husband supported you while you were on the AT. And it's interesting, I never thought about how people are meeting hikers at certain areas to help them maybe bring in some food. Or I'm just curious, the logistics of it. People don't have to do this all by themselves if they feel they need the support.
Sure. So most of my backpacking is traditional backpacking where you're carrying all your gear. And then on average on the Appalachian Trail, about every 3 or 4 days, you would go into town and you would get more supplies and keep going. But I got married before trying the record. And because of that and this close bond I have with my husband, he actually helped me to set the overall record. He met me at road crossings and brought me supplies. And so it was a logistical strategy for setting the record. But what it also made me realize is that when you are hiking the whole trail as a section hiker, or if you're trying to do it as a traditional through hike, there are so many avenues to include other people, and they don't have to hike a long time with you. Like if you have someone, a loved one, friend or family member, and they want to be part of this experience and they have like mobility issues or they're not in great shape, they can help by just encouraging you and meeting you at road crossings for a few days, or people can come and day hike short sections with you while you're still backpacking. So it's, again, Laurie referenced earlier, there's so many ways to experience the Appalachian Trail. There's not one right way. I know one of my favorite times on the Appalachian Trail was when my brother and sister-in-law brought my six-month-old niece out to see me, and we basically would just picnic together for 2 days as I hiked. But that's what the trail is for. It's there for young kids. It's there for people seeking a challenge. It's there for folks who want to hike the whole thing or go on an hour-long birding watch. So with all those options, it's just really wonderful as a through hiker to include some of those experiences and people with interest along the way.
Mm. I mentioned, Jennifer, that you set this fastest known time back in 2011. You held that record for 4 years. And then ultra runner Scott Jurek, I believe, beat your record. How did that feel? And do you think you'll try to set it again?
Well, you know, honestly, Lucy, I'll be truthful. He only broke it by 3 hours. And in that moment, I was like, oh, man, like, if you're going to break a record, break it good. Like, break it by, like, 20 hours so I don't have to rethink, like, every pee break along the way. But the rewarding part in losing the record and maybe the best part of the whole experience was that nothing changed. You know, like, someone else held the title and all the lessons and experiences and the memories and the bond I still held with my husband because of that, that I think has made us better parents and better coworkers. Like, it was so wonderful losing the record because it was like reclaiming it all over again.
We only have a little bit of time left with you, Jennifer. Your book, again, focuses on your path on the AT as you set the fastest known time. You profiled other athletes and what brought them to the trail. But this book isn't just about hiking the AT. What's a quick lesson that that readers can get from your book?
Well, you know, I think they wrote the book because the lessons of endurance are more important to me now as a mom of two young kids who's working very hard and running her own company. And so I think the most important takeaway is that physical, emotional, and mental endurance are all connected. And endurance, unlike most sports, it's not about gaining speed or gaining muscle. It's about taking things away. It's about stripping off layers. It's about lightening your pack and finding something that's deep within you. So I would say you just don't have to take anything on to be a creature of endurance. It's in there somewhere deep already, and no matter what path you're on, it's a process of uncovering it.
Jennifer Farr Davis, American long-distance hiker and author of the book, The Pursuit of Endurance, thank you so much for joining us today. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. We'll be back after a short break. But first, if you enjoy the conversations on Where We Live, support this show and the work that you hear on WNPR. Here are two of my colleagues to tell you more. This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. Coming up tomorrow, rapidly advancing technology is changing the way we do a lot of things, including policing. On the next Where We Live, police drones are coming to Hartford. Are they an invasion of privacy or a helpful tool for law enforcement? And how are lawmakers debating this new technology? Join the conversation. That's tomorrow on Where We Live. Now, do you want to hike the Appalachian Trail? You can join the conversation today, 860-275-7266. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Joining us from the studios of WGMU in Fairfax, Virginia, is Laurie Pottinger, Information Service Manager for the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. She hiked the entire AT back in 1987. Laurie, I mentioned that the ATC is working on preserving the trail. How challenging is that with this increase in popularity and with so many hikers attempting?
Well, it is a big challenge, but it's one that we want to have because we need people to love and enjoy the trail so that they will want to protect it. So ultimately, it's a good thing. We just have to be innovative and use education, sometimes actually technology, all the resources at our disposal to just reach people in different ways. But there's plenty of room for everyone if they just learn how to leave no trace and know where to go and when.
You said leave no trace, but is that something that some of those hikers aren't learning? Is there a lot of pollution along the trail?
Well, some of leave no trace is intuitive. It's like you pick up your trash. Really, most hikers are really good about it, but some things just are not intuitive. For example, part of leaving no trace is how you store your food at night and making sure that you have the skills to either hang it in a tree from a limb that's 18 feet high and 6 feet from the trunk. Like who would think of that as part of leave no trace? But ultimately it gets to every little step that you take, everything that you do, you just think about how you can minimize your impact and how if thousands or millions of people are doing the same thing, what's the most sustainable way to do it? So some of it's intuitive and some of it are skills that have to be learned, and we're trying to provide more education through our website, online courses, in-person courses, what we call Ridge Runners, just a whole different big menu of different strategies.
We'll tweet out some links to the Appalachian Trail Conservancy at Where We Live. I mentioned, Laurie, that you hiked back in 1987. What drew you to make this journey again, more than 2,000 miles?
Well, gosh, it was hearing the stories of other thru-hikers. I was lucky enough to hear a slideshow And of course, I read the books. And, you know, for anyone, it's about getting a dream. And the trail itself was just a man's dream. And I think the Appalachian Trail speaks to the power of dreams. And so any hike, whether it's just for a day or whether it's attempting what Jennifer did, starts with a big dream. But I think we also need to emphasize that you need to start small. And you start with that short day hike in easier terrain, and then you work up to maybe an overnight, and then maybe the week-long shakedown hike that Jennifer talked about. And then if you know you really like it and are ready for the six-month journey, then you can undertake that.
Jennifer Farr Davis also mentioned that this trail is open to anyone. Who are some, when we talk about age, you know, the youngest hiker to trek on the AT, the oldest, and all the people in between that attempt every year? Give us some examples.
Well, gosh, the most common demographic you see out there is 20-somethings, because actually the freedom comes the most easily at that age in life, and you don't have the so many things tying you down. But you see a lot of retirees. You see family groups, even like fathers and sons, mothers and daughters. There have been young children out there with their parents. There have been groups like veterans that have hiked the trail together as walk off the war healing kind of experience. You name it, any type of person you can think of has been out there. And sometimes we think about the trail and how there's not a great deal of diversity historically, but we definitely see that increasing because the trail is such a welcoming and friendly place. If people maybe have reservations or wonder if they're, you know, if it's the right place for them, all they have to do is go out there and find that, it, like Jennifer said, it's like the most equal environment, and people are so friendly and welcoming to everyone. So the word just needs to get out about that.
I want to welcome into the conversation now on Where We Live, Sam Ducharme. We've actually spoken to him a couple years ago. He's a Connecticut resident who thru-hiked the trail back in 2015. Now, you may recognize his name. He travels all around New England speaking at libraries about hiking the Appalachian Trail. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Lucy. Hi, Lori.
So what have you been up to, Sam? What's the latest hike that you've taken?
Well, I'm actually on my wedding trip. We're doing a lot of hiking on the Appalachian Trail, and currently we're down in Georgia. We've just been doing the Creeper Trail down here and there, Damascus.
Did you say your wedding trip?
Yeah, my future wife and I are down here hiking on the trail and having some fun before we get married down here. And then we're going to head back up to Connecticut.
Well, congratulations to you, Sam. It's been a few years again since we last spoke with you, and we're talking about the popularity of the Appalachian Trail. What's some of the advice that you give people when you give these talks around New England about setting out on the AT?
Well, biggest piece of advice none of the hikers will take, because you don't learn it till you're done hiking, is that it goes by fast and to slow down. But they're all trying to get the mileage in, so they won't listen to that, and they won't realize it till they're up the trail about a month later.
Now, when you did the AT the first time, you weren't prepared at all. When you tell people, giving them advice, I mean, that's not something that you would recommend to others?
No, I had a rough learning experience. The first month was just torture. So I try to encourage them to go out and do the shakedown packs that you hear Jennifer talk about, Lori, and work on their lungs and living outside. It's something, it was a rough lesson to learn by just walking out there.
We heard that, you know, not everyone can do the full through hike to take 6 months out of a year to hike the AT. There's other ways to do it. We heard about flip-flopping or starting in the middle. I want to welcome into the conversation now a caller from Bethlehem. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You're a Connecticut resident, and you're a section hiker. Tell us what that means.
Yes, there are probably, double the amount of section hikers as there are through hikers. We're the people who go out and do a small part of the trail. By small, I mean anything from, a weekend away to what I'm planning to do. I'm getting on the trail this Thursday, and I've got like a little more than a month. So I'm hoping to do, hundreds of miles. But I'm up here in the room packing my gear and I've been getting excited and getting myself in shape for another trip. I've done about half the trail. So that's how we do it. That's how the section hikers do it.
Now, when you're on the trail, people choose trail names. What's yours, Mike?
My name, we have trail names, kind of nicknames. You know, mine is Strummy Stick because when I go on the trail, I bring this little one-pound guitar thing. It's called a strum stick, and I bring it with me, and it's lightweight enough so I can get it in my pack, but I feel it every day as I'm walking, so so it's a chore to have it, but it's a lot of fun. I do a lot of singing and playing as I go along.
Does that get you through the more challenging terrain at times?
Sometimes you need a song to keep you going there.
you sent us a little link to one of your songs, and we'll try to tweet that out and share it with our Where We Live listeners. But, Mike, thank you for your call today as we talk about what it takes to hike the Appalachian Trail. If this is something that you're interested in doing or you have made that more than 2,000-mile hike, you can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Now, Laurie, I wanted to just ask, when we think about this volunteer organization that you work for, the Appalachian Trail Conservancy, working to preserve these trails, the impact on communities and how you rely on volunteers.
Well, gosh, Bent McKay, who founded the trail, said that volunteers are the soul of the trail, and they truly are. There are about 6,000 of them every year who work on a part of the trail, and we couldn't do it without them, and we need more. So you can go to the Appalachian Trail Conservancy website, appalachiantrail.org/volunteer, and find out what opportunities are available near you. I know Connecticut needs them. Every one of the 14 states needs more, and it's incredibly gratifying. I do that on the side. My husband and I maintain a one-mile section of the trail, and it's just as rewarding as hiking. I highly recommend getting involved.
You can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. David's calling from Hebron. David, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Lucy. I'd just kind of like to echo what Lori was just talking about. I'm involved with the Connecticut Chapter Appalachian Mountain Club Appalachian Trail Committee, and that's a group of volunteers that maintain the 52 miles in Connecticut and the adjoining Park Service land. And something I think most hikers, certainly listeners, might not be aware of is that the Appalachian Trail is also a unit of the National Park Service. And something that makes it really unique is that it's a Park Service unit that is essentially maintained and managed by volunteers. And I think that's a really special relationship that folks should be aware of and appreciate.
David, thank you for your call. Mary Ann's calling from Bloomfield. Mary Ann, go ahead.
Hi. I just want to also agree that I've been following my friend Ray Galley, a.k.a. One Foot, who is hiking the Appalachian Trail. I believe he was supposed to be interviewed today, but his service, per his wife on Facebook, must not be good.
Yeah, he's caught in a storm in North Carolina.
Yes, unfortunately. But he's hiking. He's retired from the state of Connecticut. I used to work with him, and I've been following him and his wife on Facebook, and the people on the trail are unbelievably kind and welcoming, and so I just wanted to agree that, yeah, just unbelievable.
You say that you're following Ray's journey. Is this something that you'd like to do one day, Marianne?
Oh, no. But my daughter, actually, you know, so I worked with Ray, and my daughter is going to a camp in Maine. And what the girls do is they build up their hike each year. And the last year of their camp there in senior year of high school is they hike the last 100 miles of the Appalachian Trail. And Ray helped her finalize her packing. And he's just an amazing guy. With the biggest heart, and his wife, I just met her at his going away, and she is just amazing as well.
Well, thank you, Marianne, for calling in.
You.
And it is a shame we weren't able to reach Ray Galley again, a Connecticut resident currently on the trail attempting to hike the whole AT. He's in North Carolina, and with the bad weather, we were unable to reach him. But you can follow his journey on the AT if you search on Facebook at One Foot on the AT. Laurie, we just have a couple of minutes left. Laurie Pottinger, again, Information Service Manager for the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. People can just go outdoors and hike the trails near their homes to get a taste of what's in store if they try to hike the full AT. Where can they begin? What's some advice for people who may not have the time to do the whole AT, but just want to experience a little bit of it at a time?
Well, there are 500 places that you can access the Appalachian Trail. So there's likely one near you. And one thing that we started promoting recently is called the 14 State Challenge, which is just to get out and experience a little piece of the trail in each of the 14 states. And you can set your own goals, whether it's walking past one white blaze on a tree, or visiting one trail town, or walking a mile, or doing one overnight, just to set a manageable goal that people who are working and just don't have the time for a longer hike can do and feel proud about. And we have a patch, and people find it's really inspiring and amazing. So they're just do it.
Well, Laurie Pottinger again, Information Service Manager for the Appalachian Trail Conservancy. Thank you so much for joining us today from the studios of WGMU in Fairfax, Virginia. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Also, Sam Ducharme, he joined us today, I guess on a wedding trip, as he says, hiking the trail. He travels around New England telling people about how to hike the AT and a little bit about his adventures. Sam, we thank you for calling in today as well.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Nice to talk to you again, Lucy.
This is Where We Live. I'm Lucy Nalpathanchil. That music you hear underneath us is from caller Mike from Bethlehem. His trail name is Strummy Stick, and he says that he plays the strum stick as he journeys along the trails as one way to hike the trail. So we wanted to play a little bit of that and thank him for calling in. And we thank you for listening. The show today produced by Carmen Baskoff, and you can support Where We Live with a phone call, and here are my colleagues to tell you how.
Now I try to travel around with less and less.